West is blatantly supporting the war crimes that Israel is committing in West Asia. Maybe that's why the regime profoundly discredits all international norms imposed by the West itself. Max Civili, Rome.
In the limelight.
Right from the podium of the United Nations General Assembly recently, the Zionist regime crime minister Benjamin Netanyahu issued orders to assassinate Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement in Lebanon. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, "No, not from his hotel room in Manhattan. No, not from an office in the United Nations headquarters in New York. Right from the podium of the United Nations General Assembly recently, the Zionist regime crime minister Benjamin Netanyahu issued orders to assassinate Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement in Lebanon, shortly after leaving the podium following his Churchill-like speech. The megalomaniac Tel Aviv regime premier ordered the carpet bombing of the southern suburb of Beirut, known as Zahia. Residential buildings and civilian infrastructure in the neighborhood were razed to the ground within seconds as Netanyahu walked away from the UN podium. He addressed a bunch of UN delegates who have been cheering the Zionist regime genocide in Gaza for 1 year, while others, with conscience, walked out of the hall, snubbing the war criminal. Hours after the deadliest strikes on Beirut since 2006, an image emerged of Netanyahu speaking on the phone with two military officials standing behind him in what appeared to be from New York, but is unknown whether it was taken at his hotel room or at the UN headquarters. It is irrelevant to know where the image was taken. What's important is the platform was given, and so was the green light, to execute the order for his forces to assassinate the leader of the Lebanese resistance, who had become a nightmare for Netanyahu and his fellow war criminals. Where is the United Nations, you ask? Where is the International Criminal Court? Where is the International Court of Justice? Look at Palestine for the past 76 years. If you can explain the occupation, then you can explain the existence of international law and how it has repeatedly failed and top dollars paid for it to be so. For the past week, since the start of the 79th session of the UN General Assembly on September 24th, all we have heard from world leaders are calls to stop the suffering in Gaza and the aggression on Lebanon. Their calls seem to have been oblivious to the cries of the children in Gaza found charred, in pieces and buried by their grieving parents, and the cries of the women in Lebanon wrapping their husbands, sons, and brothers in the white shroud of martyrdom. Briefly, let's just go over some of the violations that the Zionist regime has committed concerning international humanitarian law and customary international law. in violation of international laws, Geneva Conventions, and to conclude all sections of the following. Spreading terror among civilians. Principle of distinction. Indiscriminate attacks. Proportionality. Illegal means and methods of warfare. Targeting medical units and personnel. Targeting humanitarian relief personnel. Targeting journalists. Targeting hospitals and safe zones. Destroying the natural environment. Destruction and seizure of properties in occupied territory. Starvation as a method of warfare. Perfidy. Weapons that are naturally indiscriminate. Incendiary weapons. Inhuman treatment and torture. Rape and sexual violence. Using human shields. Inhuman conditions of prisoners of war. The mistreatment of the dead and the missing. Forced displacement. Destroying property of the displaced. Endangering women. Endangering children. Over 30 international law violations, and not one prosecutor could issue an arrest warrant against Netanyahu or Yoav Gallant or Benny Gantz, or even bar Netanyahu from speaking at the UN. For what was the United Nations founded? Wasn't the purpose of this organization to maintain and enforce peace and security? What is the purpose for which the International Criminal Court was established? Isn't it to prosecute individuals who commit crimes against humanity and war crimes? It is quite ridiculous to be asking these questions in a world where human rights have become selective and international law has come to serve those who violate it. When the U.S. threatens the very core of international order, if the men in order dare arrest or prosecute Netanyahu, then it is true to say that justice is blind. The United States is the top funder of the UN and many of its bodies, so it's safe to say money talks, or silences in this case. The United Nations was born out of the League of Nations, which was established in 1920 for world peace by U.S. President Woodrow Wilson, who himself endorsed and approved the Balfour Declaration responsible for the occupation of Palestine. After having failed following the outbreak of the Second World War, the UN was founded by U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt and none other than British Prime Minister Winston Churchill. The UN, the ICC, and the ICJ, through their silence and inaction, have become complicit and have given Netanyahu and the U.S. administration the silence to kill. It goes without saying that the mass atrocities and horrors wouldn't have been possible if it weren't for American-supplied F-35s, bombs, drones, and the bunker buster bombs used to assassinate Nasrullah, an Iranian military advisor, Brigadier General Abbas Nilforushan. Yet, the United Nations rolls the red carpet and gives time and space to murderers like Netanyahu, Biden, Israeli Ambassador to the UN Danny Dinan, and U.S. Ambassador to the UN Linda Thomas-Greenfield to try and justify the violations of international laws and the relentless strikes against civilians in Gaza and Lebanon. The U.S. and Israel do not know what they have just done. Nasrullah's name will never be seen in the same sentence as was. He is more than a leader. He is an idea. He is a school. And ideas and schools never die. And resistance never wilts. Generations were born and generations were raised. The Zionist regime believes it buried the Lebanese resistance, but it does not know that it buried seeds. He is a father of the free, the liberator, the great man who gave hope to the hopeless and was the voice of the defenseless, the man who children like those in Lebanon grew up after hoping one day to meet the legendary leader who instilled faith in hearts and spoke on the meaning of love, the man who protected Lebanon and Al-Quds with everything he had. The martyrdom of the hero who terrified the Israeli occupation with just the lift of his finger has only made resistance against occupation more resilient and worth being proud of. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah promised us that we would liberate Palestine together and we will pray soon in Al-Aqsa. That is not just a promise, that is the truth on the horizon that we already see near.
Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Riza, peace be upon him, has said, "If you are filled with joy when you are with us, the Ahlul Bayt, in the upper reaches of the heaven, then be sorrowful when we are sad, and be joyous when we are joyous."
Alistair, good day to you, my friend, and welcome here. I want to dwell at some length on your fascinating piece on the modern Western way of war with an emphasis on propaganda. But before we do, the news here this morning, as the sun is coming up on the east coast of the United States, is all about the exchange of fire, I'll call it, between Hezbollah and Israel. If you read the New York Times and the newspapers that and websites that we all look at over here, it sounds as though Israel didn't receive a scratch and succeeded in stopping these devices before they did any damage. What can you tell us about the latest?
Well, it's very important because it's very important to understand really what's happened, because it's setting the tone for the next phase of this war. And whatever you've read is almost certainly wrong. It's a narrative. Again, what you've seen, it's not. So let's just go through it, and I will explain what it meant in terms of what's happened.
Please do.
First of all, it all happened around about 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. And the Israelis started to see people moving in Lebanon and moving towards platforms. And so Hezbollah was planning of the operation to fire drones and rockets at 5:15 on Sunday morning. And Israel started to an attack, and a direct attack, and it involved, I think, about 100 aircraft. But contrary to what the Israeli propagandist at the IDF was saying, and I know this not from Hezbollah, but I know this from inside Lebanon, people who were on the ground there, it was a chaotic 20 minutes. Israel just bombed various valleys where they imagined the ballistic missiles were. But they'd been cleared out of there some time ago, and there were no ballistic missiles. You can check that. I mean, you know, there are people on the ground who know what's happened. There are no missiles. So when it said they destroyed thousands of missile launchers, this is a complete lie. Because first of all, there are no missiles, no ballistic missiles, no large missiles south of the Litani River. What you have is drones and small rockets there. And none of these had launchers, and they destroyed none of them. It was just a show. It was a show of force, and it only lasted about 20 minutes. And you can tell that it wasn't really anything terribly serious, because Hezbollah, who actually does admit casualties on these occasions, have always been very honest when they've lost people, say that the whole process, they lost two men in this, which is indicates, I think, that it wasn't a very serious, and they hit no launchers. In fact, Hezbollah say, and there's every reason to think this is correct, that the platforms, the drone platforms that they were flying, were unaffected, or they lost one, I think, or two maybe, but it was no great rout. All that is just pure propaganda. Now, the important point is not so much about the details of this, but to understand what's happening. I mean, what is the strategy and what are we seeing here? What we're seeing here is a recalibration of the war. Originally, the war, if you like, for the Axis group, was all about supporting Sinwar and Hamas in Gaza. They were auxiliaries to this war and were supporting it. And what we have seen in the subsequent period was that the war fragmented in different ways. First of all, it fragmented by the killing of Fuad Shukr in Beirut, just before Haniyeh was killed in Tehran. And for that reason, the actual operations of the resistance changed, because as far as Hezbollah was concerned, the killing of Fuad crossed all the red lines. All the understandings, the careful balances were broken by that. And they opened a separate account, quite separately to Gaza, what was happening to Gaza. And they opened a separate account. And so what happened in this weekend was about settling that account with Israel. And it stuck very carefully to the equations, the war equations that they had between Israel and Hezbollah. They didn't go out of the equations. So they, if you like, attacked in Tel Aviv, the Mossad headquarters and the headquarters of 82,000, equivalent roughly to NSA in the US. It's the, if you like, the communications intercept. Because that was a decision-making, if you like, structure that led to Fuad Shukr's killing in Beirut. And they did it in Tel Aviv because they killed him in Beirut. So it was a complete equivalence, if you like, on that. And they had one phase was 320 rockets. Mm. Of course, it's been played down. I can't tell you exactly how many might have been shot down or didn't land properly, but they were targeted not on people or on civilians. They were targeted on military bases, and they were targeted very precisely on Andom air defense systems. So you don't see that. And then immediately on Sunday, after the, if you like, so 4 o'clock, the Israelis came in just before, started bombing pretty randomly in the valleys and the areas where they thought Hezbollah would have their ballistic missiles. But as I say, there were none. There are none there north of the Litani. Israel sent a message to Hezbollah by not going beyond Litani that the equations of war with Israel were still holding. And that's a very important point. So now Hezbollah restarts the war for the 40 kilometers of territory that Israel has lost and given up to Hezbollah. Now they say that first phase with the shooting of the rockets, and then the actual drones were shot from the Bekaa Valley, which is in the east of Lebanon. The drones that were shot, and they Hezbollah says they got through and hit that Mossad building, which is just outside. I've been to it long ago. It's just outside Tel Aviv. It's about a kilometer or two outside Tel Aviv on the Herzliya, which is also the headquarters of, familiar to you, Lavender, the people right. who set up Lavender and operated Lavender. So right. it was to be an equivalence, okay? So this was taken now that they have settled the open account on Fuad Shukr. And Hassan Nasrallah last night made a statement and saying, if we have been successful, as our evidence and intelligence suggest, then this can be the end of this account on Fuad Shukr, but there may be a second stage to it later. But that's only if necessary. But this first phase has now entered, finished, and now we go back to what we were originally fulfilling, which is, if you like, the liberation of the Palestinians. It is very clearly now that Hezbollah has moved away from Shukr and is now returning to, if you like, the support for Hamas, the support for the Palestinians. This is an anti-colonial liberation fight that involves all Islam in their view.
So if you look at the major newspapers, if you look at the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal this morning, the print editions, they both feature prominently the exact same photograph, which purports to be the Israelis exploding some sort of a Hezbollah missile way up in the sky. And doing so successfully.
That's an old photograph. It's nothing new. And one of the reasons we can't give more detail of this is immediately at 5 o'clock in the morning, the Israeli government issued an absolute ban on any reporting of any damage or any attacks on either major infrastructure or military objectives in Israel. A complete censor was imposed on what happened in Tel Aviv, what happened at the airbase, which they also attacked, which is where the drones flew from that attacked Fuad Shukr. Absolute ban, no reporting, no photographs, no visuals. And so they put a complete blackout on any news of any damage to any infrastructure, any defense sites, or to the intelligence bases in Tel Aviv. So, of course, we can't see and we can't prove it. But as I say, I do know independently what I said about that the Israeli attack, where they say they knocked out thousands of rocket launchers, is complete phooey. It's nothing. It's completely untrue.
Is Hezbollah happy with the outcome of what occurred in this 20-minute period?
Yeah, I think so. I think so because, first of all, I think that what we're talking about here is they've reestablished the equation with Israel, and clearly Israel, for the moment, doesn't wish to go to all-out war against Hezbollah. Hezbollah, I think, are satisfied, although, of course, you know, the narrative has been spun as if it was a great defeat for Hezbollah. As I say, they didn't touch their main weapons. They didn't use a single cruise or ballistic missile. They just used drones and simple rockets, Katusha rockets, 340 Katusha rockets. So, and the drones were fired from far out on the east, almost in Syria, and they went through, and according to Hezbollah, and Hezbollah has good intelligence, it has airborne intelligence of these, the drone intelligence. He says these drones landed on those two targets just near to Tel Aviv and caused damage. Of course, there's no sign of that from Israel because there's a complete blackout on news on anything of that sort coming out of Israel. So what Hassan Nasrallah also says is that, therefore, this was an independent action that was about Fuad Shukr. It's now complete. We go back to attrition. This is the whole point. We're talking about attrition, not to go to a full all-out war. And they said that the other members of the Axis, including Ansarullah, the Houthis, and Iran, have all agreed that they're going to do their own thing because Iran has a separate account open, just as Hezbollah has an account open with Israel for the killing of Fuad Shukr. So Iran has an account which is separate to the Palestinian issue open state, but this one is state to state. The Hezbollah, if you like, war with Iran essentially is a liberation war for Palestine. Right. Iran has one with Israel, which is about the honor of Iran, the humiliation of killing a guest at the inauguration of their president in Tehran, and they will take their time and do it separately.
All right.
And the key point I just want to finish, because I think it's very important, is we've seen a friend of mine who recalled and was present and saw the Six-Day War, if you like, in the Middle East with Syria and Egypt. He said, you know, this huge buildup of forces by the Americans, enormous forces. And we just waited till everything was in place by the Americans. And then in a few hours, they destroyed everything of the Egyptians and the Syrians in terms of their air forces. And you can see the same thing. I mean, I think it's nearly half the Navy, US Navy, is in the Mediterranean and in the Gulf at the moment. Huge forces have been. Diego Garcia has B-2 bombers come into it now. Now, then Iran is not frightened by this. This isn't the, you know, 67. Things have changed completely. They've been planning a defense against the United States for 20 years. They have these huge missile towns underneath, which are entirely automatic. The missiles fire from deep in the ground, 90 meters, through, if you like, the tubes, straight out. And they're across Iran, same in Lebanon. It's not a worry. But the point is, you know, it's clear that Netanyahu wants war, and some in the United States want war with Iran. So if they want war, why give it? I mean, why do you, you know, don't, if this is what their objective is, and this is what Netanyahu particularly needs quickly, don't do it. Don't help them out. Go back to attrition. Get back in control of the escalatory process. They want to control the escalatory process. They don't want to hand a gift free to Netanyahu to say, oh, of course there'll be a new provocation that will come. I mean, one provocation was in Damascus when he assassinated those IRGC generals. Then there was Haniyeh in Tehran. And for sure, he's going to try something else to try and get the Americans involved in a war with Iran. But why give it to him on a plate? So let's go back, because attrition is working extremely effectively. Don't just, you know, allow yourself, you know, to be led like a Pavlovian dog into reacting as the Americans and the Israelis would like you to react. Just wait, leave, strategic patience. It is not a weakness. It is a very clear set of sense of strategy, that actually the greatest weakness, a prominent general, just these last days, said, a major general, senior, was saying that, you know, in a big war or in this war of attrition, Israel cannot last a year.
This is an Israeli general, Alistair?
Yes, Brick is his name, B-R-I-K, General Brick, Major General Brick, very highly regarded general.
This is such a fascinating scenario, and I'm also fascinated with the highly misleading news this morning that publications like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times would publish an old photograph and lead their readers to believe that this is what happened last night fits right in with your article about Western propaganda. Does Hezbollah care about propaganda? Do they care that the West is trying to make them look like something other than what they are?
The blunt answer, the frank answer is no, because they can't. And I used to have this discussion often with, sometimes with Hezbollah, and I'd said, you know, but you don't do anything about your image. You don't do anything. And they just say to me, you know, what's the point? I mean, the West completely dominates and completely manages the international media. What would be the point in us trying to do it? And occasionally, I did once get from the Los Angeles Times, and I said, why don't you spend a month with a family in Beirut, in a Hezbollah family, there, and just understand the culture and the situation? And to his credit, he did. He stayed nearly a month there with the family, talking and hearing about what it was like and trying to understand it. And then he wrote to me afterwards, and he said, you know, I wrote a 10,000-word essay on it, and the editor just tore it up. He said, we're never going to publish this.
I want to play for you what is arguably Israeli propaganda. It's the first time I've seen a personal insult of this magnitude on international media, but on the floor of the United Nations Security Council. So here's Danny Dannon, the former Israeli ambassador to the UN, now sort of a roving ambassador. Tell me what you think of this. It's from August 22nd, last week.
The representative of the Palestinian Authority is still here. He has been sitting in that chair for 20 years. You have accomplished absolutely nothing. Since October 7th, you have delivered hundreds of speeches, yet you have never uttered anything even resembling a condemnation of Hamas. Mr. Mansour, if you cannot condemn them, you are one of them. You do not represent the Palestinian people. Mr. Mansour, you are a terrorist in a suit. I demand you to condemn Hamas. If you do not condemn them, you are one of them.
What is served by this kind of a personal attack, and have you seen anything like this before?
Well, unfortunately, you know, I've been dealing with this part of the world for a long time, so I have seen things like this. And you know, it's something that I've been saying here quite a lot. There is a huge change in Israel, and we're seeing really, you know, it's almost to a civil war level. Ben-Gvir has armed 10,000 vigilantes with weapons. He handed them out legally, gave them to them. He's just now appointed a police chief, which is one of his protégés, to take over. There is a deep, deep, if you like, schism in Israel, almost to the point of getting to civil war. And the feelings and the anger and what has gone completely is any empathy for Palestinians whatsoever. They just feel, you know, if we get to an existential point, it's either them or us, and it's going to be us that survive and not the Palestinians. And so that's where we were. Nothing happened in the talks. Netanyahu insists on keeping, if you like, the Philadelphia corridor. We all know why. It is because when, as he sees it, when Gaza has been sufficiently stripped of any means of supporting life, they will open the gates at Rafah, which they now control, and just drive them into the Sinai desert. And of course, Sisi will complain, and the West will give him a few billion to pay off his debt, and it will happen. That's the plan. That's why he wants the Philadelphia corridor. That's why Hamas says absolutely no.
Who could take Netanyahu as a negotiator seriously? Who could possibly believe that his end goal in these negotiations is a ceasefire? No one.
No one. But, you know, I mean, one of the problems we have in this age is, and I've set it out sometime earlier on this thing, is there are two complete narratives. I mean, you know, there is an outer narrative, which is that he's working to get the hostages home and Israel is working to get these things done. And of course, they'd like a ceasefire and then quiet in Lebanon and everything will go back to normal. But there is an inner story, which they will not admit so openly, which is about a new Nakba, which is the actually removal of Palestinians from the river to the sea. And that is really what this is about. And Gaza was always to be the first step. West Bank would follow, and then it would move on. And there will be a provocation that will come because they know they need a war or a crisis or chaos in order to do the clearance of Palestinians out of the West Bank.
Right.
And push them into Lebanon. So they need this thing, and they've said that. I remember seeing it 7 years ago. By Smotrich saying, don't worry, we need a war, we need chaos, and then we can go ahead with this plan and fulfill the plan. And this is, and the first step is Gaza. Depopulate Gaza, then we will move to the West Bank and depopulate the West Bank, and then we will depopulate the whole and take the security control from the river to the sea. That is the unstated inner, if you like, objectives. No one will say them publicly, but if you read the vibes, if you read the runes of what is happening, that's why he doesn't want a deal. This is why there's all these objections coming up to it. Now, some of Israelis don't agree with us, and they see the danger because they worry that if they go into an all-out war, if they start a Nakba, anything can happen, and it might be the existential, and as Major General Brick said, you know, we may collapse within a year under these sort of pressures. Either of attrition, he said. He actually said, either the attrition on us or a regional war, we won't last a year. Do we not realize, oh Israelis, that it's this serious? And then you get this propaganda coming up. This is why it's so dangerous. Then you get the propaganda from the admiral, who's the spokesperson for the IDF, saying, oh, we knocked out thousands of missile launchers. They did no damage. It was fine. We don't have to worry. So if we have another war with Hezbollah, you Israelis, Americans, don't worry. It'll be easy. It's fine.
Alistair Crook, thank you for a marvelous analysis of modern warfare and geopolitics from Kursk to Rafah. Very much appreciated, my dear friend. Thank you for your time.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی است.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب
الله. اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد عودك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host, Mahdi, and our honorable guest, dear brother Muhammad Reza, is here with us in the studio. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother Mahdi, and Assalamu alaikum to all of the dear listeners of this program.
Thank you for accepting our invitation, brother.
Thank you.
Well, dear audience, as you may know, this program, Let's Recite the Quran, consists of several Quranic parts. In the first part, we are going to talk about a famous reciter of the Holy Quran. After that, we are going to listen to a recitation of that famous Qari, and then Brother Muhammad is going to analyze that recitation. Beside these parts, we are going to listen to some other interesting Quranic parts. So stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio presents
Let's Recite the Quran.
Recitation.
Tajweed points.
Reciter's biography.
Quranic books.
Maqamat.
Translation.
Alhan.
Short lecture.
All
in Let's Recite the Quran.
Well, today we are going to listen to a recitation by Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan. This prominent master of recitation had a unique style, and it's really difficult to follow his style of recitation. You can say it's impossible to imitate him. He was known as Malikul Waqf wal Ibtida wa Tanghim, which Brother Muhammad is going to talk more about that. The skill of this prominent master of Waqf wal Ibtida was to the point that one of the university professors, Dr. Isa V. Muhammad Naja, wrote his doctorate dissertation on the art of Sheikh Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan in Waqf wal-Ibtida. Even in Egypt, because of his skill in Waqf wal-Ibtida, Sheikh Hassan was called jurisprudent reciter. Now it's time to listen to the recitation of Sheikh Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan, reciting verse 151 of Surah Al-An'am, preceded by its English translation. Let's enjoy it.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Say, come, I will recite unto you that which your Lord hath made a sacred duty for you, that ye ascribe nothing as partner unto Him, and that ye do good to parents, and that ye slay not your children because of penury. We provide for you and for them, and that ye draw not nigh to lewd things, whether open or concealed, and that ye slay not the life which Allah hath made sacred, save in the course of justice. This He hath commanded you in order that ye may discern.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل تعالوا أتل ما حرم ربكم عليكم ألا تشركوا به شيئا وبالوالدين إحسانا ولا تقتلوا أولادكم من إملاق نحن نرزقكم ولا تقربوا الفواحش ما ظهر منها وما بطن ولا تقتلوا النفس التي حرم الله إلا بالحق ذلكم وصاكم به لعلكم تعقلون صدق الله
Dear audience, you're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran from IRIB English Radio. And what you just listened to was recitation of verse 151 of Surah Al-An'am, recited by Sheikh Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Yeah, sure. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First, let's talk about the style of Sheikh Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan, the style of his recitation. Just like he said, it's extremely difficult to follow his style, to imitate the style of Sheikh Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan, because it has so much variety and so many maqams are used in different ways and they are combined with one another. And in general, his recitation is unpredictable, okay? Even the ones who follow the style of Hassan, they don't have the creativity of Sheikh Hassan in their recitation. They just imitate some of the simple maqams and melodies that he has used. And he is Malik al-Waqf wal-Ibtida. Some say that Hassan, he has a short breath and he can't, you know, recite very long verses and two lines or three lines. But that's not true, in my opinion. I think Hassan, he is so adept at using the maqams that even when he recites like half a line, he uses so many melodies in various ways that, you know, the listener becomes satisfied and it feels that, okay, that's
astonished, enough. Maybe.
Not just astonished. The listener becomes satisfied with that much of the Quran that is recited.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we could say that it's a compressed.
Mm-hmm. Saturated, you mean?
Saturated or compressed usage of maqamat. Okay, so even though he's reciting in a very short intervals and short lines of the Quran, he's showing many maqams, and it's a very technical recitation. Yes, just like you said, Sheikh Hassan is Malikul Waqf wal Ibtida, meaning he has a good knowledge. He has great knowledge of waqf, stopping, and
where
continuing.
To where to stop.
For example, if he says, قُلْ تَعَلَوْ أَتْلُ مَا حَرَّمَ رَبُّكُمْ عَلَيْكُمْ, it has one meaning. Then he could say, عَلَيْكُمْ أَلَّا تُشْرِكُوا بِهِ شَيْئًا. It is obligatory on you not to associate partners with Allah, associate anything with Allah. This could be one example, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on where you stop from where you continue,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
And now if you agree, let's talk about some tajweed points.
Yes, just quickly, I'll mention some tajweed points. The first one is ihsana. The ha was pronounced with buha and also rakhawa. Ihsana. If you say ihsana, the buha is not enough.
It's not complete, yeah.
Yes. Imlaqa. The qaf is sakin. You have to apply qalqala, and Sheikh Hassan does that. Batan. This is very difficult to pronounce. Ba-ton. We have first a letter of istifal, followed by a letter of isti'la.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one should be pronounced with tarqiq.
Thinness.
Yes, and the second one with tafkhim. Ba-ton.
The second highest level.
At the second highest level, exactly.
Ba-ton.
Yes. Bil-haqqa. The qaf has a tashdeed, okay? So if you apply qalqala, you should hold it for some time and then release mm-hmm. the qaf.
To show tashdeed.
Tashdeed, yes. Thalikum wassakum. The meme is pronounced with ilhar, the first meme. Wassakum bihi. The second meme has ikhfa. And finally, the third meme, la'allakum ta'qilun. Again, the meme has ilhar.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio, for staying with us. You're still listening to the program, Let's Recite the Quran. Don't go away.
On June 29th, 2014, Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, said, "The Holy Quran should be read by paying careful attention. We should pay attention that a mere formation of sounds is not enough. We should read the Holy Quran by paying attention to the meaning and to Quranic requests. If this is done, then the Islamic community will find its path. Allah is the protector of those who have faith. From the depth of darkness, He will lead them forth into light." Dear audience, that was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Until next program, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Goodbye.
يا خالق الإنسان نورنا بالقرآن بمصحف الإيمان ندعوك نرجوك يا مالك التكوين ندعوك نرجوك يا مالك التكوين املأ قلبي قرآن اشرح صدري قرآن املأ قلبي قرآن اشرح صدري قرآن.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says American and European presence is the root cause of the ongoing conflicts in West Asia. Iran launches a massive missile attack at Israel's military targets in retaliation for the regime's violation of the country's sovereignty and assassinations of resistance leaders. And in Lebanon, Hezbollah fighters force Israeli troops to retreat after they tried to infiltrate into a southern town. I am Bahman Nurayi. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the presence of extra-regional powers claiming to seek peace is the root cause of the ongoing conflicts in West Asia. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei was addressing a group of academic elites in Tehran. He said the conflicts in the region would end if the United States and certain European states would stop their negative influence. Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that regional countries have the capacity to govern themselves and coexist peacefully. He also referred to the martyrdom of Hezbollah leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah in an Israeli airstrike in Beirut last week. Iran's leader said he was very saddened by Nasrallah's loss. Iran has launched